The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the song on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood fraternities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Where's the tiger? I can't find the tiger. Lost the tiger. Ain't seen the tiger. Where's the tiger? Look for the tiger. Lost the tiger. Has anybody seen the tiger?
We're back at the races, and didn't take Deja long to catch on to the John White theme. Tiger Rag and the great Imelda May, and John White joins us. John, I have told you privately, but congratulations publicly on winning the Joe Hirsch.
Thanks a lot, Steve. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the kind words that you had for me the other morning on your show. I very much appreciate it, and it's a great honor and very meaningful to me. And as you articulated when you talked about it, kind of ironically, you were saying it took a few days for me to find out about the award. I can tell you why. I don't recall that we got any phone calls that were even a hint that it was from the New York Racing Association, but the morning that I found out, which was last Wednesday, my wife Tracy said, you know, there was a phone call that might have been for you. And I said, what's that? And she said, well, it said New York RA. And we get so bombarded with these robocalls these days that I thought, you know, this must be one of those, somebody's trying to sell something or what have you or whatever. And then you texted me and said, call
Pat.
Pat McKenna at Naira immediately. And I thought, I connected the dots then, and I thought, oh, gee, this might mean, and I hope it means, that I did win that award, which, quite honestly, I'd go farther than saying the main reason. Really, the only reason I decided to put an entry in was because of the name of the award. And the fact that it's the Joe Hirsch Award, you know, I thought, you know what, it's only going to cost me a couple of stamps to send this in. So that's exactly what I did.
That's great. There's two categories, kind of feature spot news type, deadline reporting and feature style reporting, and Paul Volpone, the other recipient, and Paul also, has a long, long running career on the writing side, and being the namesake for the for the Breeders' Cup Classic winner, that's a pretty good legacy to walk around with that name. So it's very cool. For us, for those that listen to you regularly, John, there's so many people. Just recently, you heard Leon Blusewitz. You heard Leon say how much he enjoys, your takes on topics and on, the history of the game, and how much that's appreciated. And I think that, those that have listened over the years to you here also can understand, the serious-minded approach that you take and have taken to all the various capacities within the sport that you've enjoyed, whether as a steward, as a chart caller, as a correspondent, as a analyst, as a morning line maker. There's only a handful of people that have, touched in all of these areas the way you have, and it gives you a unique and such a well-rounded perspective.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. Again, very much appreciated. And for the column or blog or article, it started out for many years at ExpressBet.com. It was called a column. Now they generally call it a blog, even though that's become pretty passe, but ExpressBet's gone with that term. But then it's also listed as an article. So I've kind of been thinking of it as a column blog article. It's kind of nice for me that I won this award that you were mentioned in there a couple of times, your show, because, again, it's a demonstration of the impact of your show and yourself. There was a section in what I wrote about Justify, and it was the headline for the section was, "The clues were there for all to see." And right there at the start of that section, I talked about how the first public clue in terms of Justify was when Rick Hammerly came on your show. And look, I'll never forget it as long as I live. It was right where I'm sitting right now at my desk. I was finishing up the morning line for that card, the February 18th card at Santa Anita. I'd already made Justify like an 8-5 morning line favorite, but I hadn't sent it in yet. And so then Rick Hammerly comes on and he starts talking about, "Well, Steve, I just wanted to let people know that if you're in any one of those Kentucky Derby contests or what have you," and see, I remember him starting it with that kind of approach. He said, "There's a horse you may want to keep an eye on, and that's, he's running here on Sunday," and he said, "his name's Justify," and he says, "Bob Ampert does not come into my office very often, really rare, and ask about a particular race," and he says, "He was just in there asking about this race, so you better keep an eye on this three-year-old, because, of course, Justify never raced as a two-year-old. He was the first to win the Derby since Apollo, and 1886, which I've written about for years, and it, of course, got the name the Apollo Jinx, the Apollo Hex. But To say I was riveted by what Rick Hammerly was saying, you know, and so I cut the price on Justify knowing, because I was under the impression, quite possibly too, I have such respect for people out at Santa Anita, like Gary Young, and he talked with Rick Hammerly all the time. And I'm thinking, you know what, this is going to be one of those hyped Baffert horses, what have you, that's probably going to get hammered. And so I made him a very strong morning line favorite. And so then he wins the race by 9.5 lengths. And another clue was when Baffert said to Mike Willman in the winner's circle right after the race, when Willman said, you know, what about the Kentucky Derby? And I'm expecting Baffert to say something like, well, you know, that, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. And instead he immediately says, no, it's not too late. And he says, I have a plan. And this was meaningful to me because through a friend, once Rick Hammerly, once I did my work for the Sunday card at Santa Anita, I happened to have a friend in Las Vegas at the time. And I thought, you know what, I wonder what price this horse is in the future book. So I called up my friend. I said, go over there to the Wynn and find out what price you can get on this horse. And he called me back, and he was 100-1, so I got $100 on him at 100-1. And that's why I was so pleased when Baffert said it wasn't too late for the Kentucky Derby, because I figured it probably was too late for the Kentucky Derby. Because remember with Justify, who he was following. You had just mentioned Arrogate a few moments ago, and Arrogate missed the Triple Crown races, but look what he did the second half of the season. It was spectacular, and Baffert ended up having the three-year-old male champion that year, and so Baffert was rewarded for his patience with Arrogate the very following year. Was West Coast, and again, he missed the Triple Crown races,
yep.
And he had a very strong second half of the year, and he also was the three-year-old Eclipse Award-winning champion, male champion. So the two preceding years before Justified, Baffert had won the Eclipse Award for three-year-old male with horses that missed the Triple Crown. Here he's dealing with a three-year-old who didn't even run as a two-year-old, and I'm thinking he's going to follow the same blueprint as he did with Arrogate and West Coast. And it's a real testament to Bob Baffert, his greatness, because he treats each horse as an individual. This gets lost, but Baffert is as good as I've ever seen. I mean, that's part of what made Charlie Whittingham. It's part of what made Laz Barrera. It's part of what has made a Richard Mandela or, you know, a D. Wayne Lucas. These guys look at these horses, and they're like a great coach that knows what buttons to push for each particular player, or in the case of a trainer, for each particular horse. And Baffert obviously knew that Justify had the mental makeup and the physical makeup to try to tackle going through the Triple Crown, let alone just go to the Kentucky Derby. So, and then the another clue was when 2 days after the Santa Anita Derby, Baffert told you on his show, he said, and remember, Justify, to win the Santa Anita Derby, the way he did beating Bolt the Oro with only a couple of races under his belt was, to me, extremely impressive. And Baffert said that Justify is just a phenomenal talent. Now, you don't hear Baffert use that phrase, that kind of phrase, very often. It's very rare. I mean, he's not someone that just throws a statement like that around willy-nilly. And so these were there were many clues for Justify, and a couple of them I was able to pass along in this article, column, or blog that's been recognized with this prestigious Joe Hirsch Award by including these comments that were made to you, Steve, on your program.
Well, and it's those kinds of... It's those kinds of little hints, and you know, there certainly are certain horsemen that you can read, you know, more easily than others. I mean, Greinich referring to Bill Mott Mott is always a a very easy read as well. You can always tell when he's feeling good about a horse that's coming into a toward a big effort and toward a big goal. I find Baffert there's certain certain little hints that that he drops. You're right about kind of read between read a little bit between the lines.
So we handicap horses, we handicap races, and part of it is handicapping trainers and not just their work, but again, reading them in terms of these clues. Because I'll give another example. I mentioned Whittingham, and I miss so much the mornings I spent with him because those are just so special to me. But I'm telling you, he was pretty easy to read too, if you know, if you got to know him. But you know, where Baffert called Justify just a phenomenal talent out of the Santa Anita Derby, what would get my attention with Charlie Whittingham is if we would be sitting there and clocking his horses, and he might have a first-time starter, and he would look over to me after the workout, and he'd say, you know, I think that's a decent filly. Well, that was basically like saying, this might be Ruffian. I mean, you know, some guys would have to say, wow, this is that. How impressive was that? And, wow, that was just amazing. Or, you know, another example, I can remember being in the Del Mar backstretch, walking through there back in the early 1980s, and I wasn't headed to Joe Banzi's barn, but he came. I came across him, and he was holding his stopwatch, and he practically came running over to me, and he says, John, guess what just happened? And I said, what? He says, Roving Boy became a man today. And he shows me his watch and the time, and he was so excited. And, well, he was right, because it was the turning point on Roving Boy. Roving Boy would end up winning the Del Mar Futurity, the Norfolk Stakes, and the Hollywood Futurity, defeating Copeland, who was the top two-year-old colt from the East, in the showdown in the Hollywood Futurity, and Roving Boy was the Eclipse Award-winning two-year-old male that year. But that's, you know, Manzi was just going crazy. That would not have been Charlie Whittingham's style. His style was, like I say, he would just say something like, you know, something like, she can run a little bit. That was like screaming from the roofs that this was a really, you know, a real runner for sure. So, like you say, I mean, you know, and Baffert is one that if you know, through the years you begin to really realize, you know, you can pick up these clues with him, and that was a big clue with him, you know, to say that out of the Senate. And remember, Baffert said that before the Kentucky Derby. You know, Baffert's kind of a superstitious guy, and he's not going to sit there and make such a compliment to a three-year-old like that on the brink of the Kentucky Derby. In most cases, Baffert wouldn't want to say that for fear he'd jinx himself. So that was, you know, I'm kind of throwing that into the mix, into realizing that it was clear Baffert really felt he had an extraordinarily special colt on his hands. And look at, you know, when we look back now, a year later, at what Justify did, and I think as time wears on and we see what he did without racing as a two-year-old, and to never lose a race. And I really salute you, Steve, and Steve Haskin. I read Steve Haskin's Hanging with Haskin, to where you guys have talked about how that crop, the Justify crop, was mocked so much. And it's proven to certainly not be as bad of a crop as a lot of people were trying to make it out to be.
No doubt. And you know, we're not even halfway through the 4-year-old year for these horses. They'll be further, you know, further exploits. Since Baffert came up, let's touch John on the weekend a little bit. And the horse that I was referring to, if people heard the reference going out, Comical Ghost shows up. And you know, this was a horse that, as a 2-year-old, there had been some real murmurings and some excitement in the Godolphin camp about him, and obviously, you know, setbacks and delayed, and haven't heard really the specifics about you know, what the issues were. However, comes out Saturday, 88 Beyer in this debut. I thought it was worth noting that debuted at 6 furlongs. So it's not going to be, you know, he's not going to, you know, instantly start moving. I suppose his next step will be toward, you know, toward two-turn racing. But for now, he's going to have to use that as the stepping stone. I bring it up only because if he had, you know, started at 7 furlongs in particular, John, that, you know, that can be a fast track to a mile and a sixteenth. 6 furlongs, though, he's going to need an intermediate step. So we'll see what Baffert, you know, how quickly he moves along with this one.
Well, certainly the pedigree is there. This is the son of Gold Zapper, the 2004 Horse of the Year, the horse that Bobby Frankel said was the best horse he ever trained. And again, that Frankel, to make a statement like that, we go back down to what we were just talking about. I mean, unlike some trainers that would say this one's the best, that one's the best. I mean, Frankel was not one to throw out a statement like that. And we talk about the Met Mile. Gold Zapper ran one of the most memorable Met Miles I've ever seen. And the dam here, Hysterical Lady, was one of my favorites. In fact, I was driving into Santa Anita one fall, prepared to make a large wager on her against Zenyatta. And it was a short field, like a four-horse field, and it was the race that would be right before the Breeders' Cup for Zenyatta. Not the Breeders' Cup Classic, but this was the year before. And I was thinking that, you know what, John Sheriffs is the type of trainer, and this is where sometimes you can start to overthink things sometimes. And I thought, you know, John Sheriffs is not the type of trainer that necessarily is going to crank somebody up to the hilt in their race right before the Breeders' Cup. This was 2008. And as a matter of fact, I'm looking at it now, it was a three-horse field. And I thought, you know, it's going to be tough for Zenyatta with her running style. That's virtually like a match race. And I thought, if there's a time this Zenyatta might get knocked off, today could be the day. And so I was going to make a large wager on Hysterical Lady. I got to the track, and I got to thinking, you know what? I must be out of my mind. This Zenyatta has looked like... She's just invincible. And here I'm sitting here licking my chops to try to make a big bet against her. And Zenyatta went off at 7-10. And I don't remember the price on Hysterical Lady, but it wasn't that different. And well, by the time we got to the race, I had done a complete turnaround. And I thought, instead of betting Hysterical Lady, I should just continue to ride this Zenyatta ride and not get off of her. And so I switched and bet Zenyatta, who won by 3.5 lengths, and then in her next start won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic, defeating a very strong field of fillies and mares in that race. That's a race that's kind of forgotten for her because her Breeders' Cup Classic win was so spectacular. But she beat Cocoa Beach, Music Note, some really nice distaffers in that race that at that time, unfortunately, was called the Ladies Classic, which I remember a certain radio broadcaster, to his credit, refused really to ever utter that term, Ladies Classic. So.
Yeah, it was so offensive and preposterous that it was the most ill-conceived... Anyway, yeah.
Well, I'm glad they... You know, the nice thing is they sure didn't stick with it. I mean,
no,
fortunately...
No.
You know, they came to their senses and realized the error of their ways, and so thank goodness we went back to you know, and I will give them credit for that, because like you say, the decision to switch that was you know, really left a lot to be desired for a lot of us.
Well, it was a notion, frankly, that
was being done at the time with the thought that somehow it would simplify, it would make people understand easier that the distaff was the companion race to the classic. That thinking that we have to dumb down this sport and the game at large is just, it's just a wrong-headed concept. The game is challenging, it's taxing, it takes investment of time and, you know, mental acuity. You don't dumb it down. In fact, you play up the strength that this is an intellectual challenge. And I've said this for ages that, you know, there's a trade or a class of individual out there that loves puzzles and the mind game and you know the interpretation of information, you know, into an opinion. It's stimulating, it's rewarding, and you don't try to simplify it for you know people who buy scratch off tickets. It's very frustrating.
And I agree with you. And I one thing that I approach I've taken really pretty much throughout my entire racing career. I guess this stems from the fact that when I was a kid, I was just out there in the crowd and enjoying myself at the track, and a lot of times with my late father or at the tracks that he would be working in the money room, I'd be out there with some of his friends or just by myself. But look, I realized how sharp the people by and large are at the track. And I learned that also in the seminars I've done at various tracks throughout the country, from Sunland Park to Lone Star Park to Emerald Downs to the Southern California tracks, or when I've been on TV and I get off the set and I've had people look. I met you at Calder when I was there for HRTV.
That's right.
Speed. And, you know, a couple of guys came up to me near the winner's circle there after one of the races that I did the winner's circle interview and wanted to chat, which I was, you know, very happy to do. But I'll never forget something that they mentioned to me at that time. And that's one thing I've always loved about racing is you can learn something all the time. So in other words, instead of, for me, wanting to dumb it down for other people, I'm oftentimes picking things up from those people. And what these guys brought to my attention, they pointed out there was a two-year-old earlier on the card, or maybe later in the card. I don't even remember that now because we're going back so many years. But they had talked about, and I really had never heard this concept before, and I've never forgotten it since they brought it up, but that is, the sales price, which, again, we have so much more information at our fingertips today in this game than when I was a kid. I mean, even much later than I was a kid, you had to look up these sales prices on these horses, and I did that a lot, but it took a lot of work. And now, you know, they don't put all the sales prices. When there's pinhooking involved, you only get, you know, the one sales price of the PPs, but we get that sales price. It's very helpful. And they pointed out a horse that was running that day at Calder that the sales price was something, you know, like many, many times more than the stud fee for the sire. And they said, you know, we have found that whenever you see this, it's a really good betting angle. What do you think? And I said, well, that's kind of a new one on me. And I said, it kind of makes sense that would be something, because obviously they're not buying the horse off the pedigree. So that's showing you that they're seeing other aspects of the horse, and oftentimes it would, of course, be a two-year-old sale. So that's telling you that the horse had shown a lot in one of these breezes. In fact, this morning at Santa Anita, they're having one of those for the Fasig Tipton sale that will be held in the paddock at Santa Anita on Wednesday. And they're very excited at Santa Anita about this sale. There hasn't been a horse sale at Santa Anita for eons, and so, you know, people will be out there this morning watching these in the breeze show. And like I say, these are the types of things. One of my greatest, I feel, accomplishments in this game, when I did the paddock commentary for all those many years at Santa Anita, that my first year of doing that was 1993. But, I'd say about maybe 8, 9, 10 years ago, this guy really, for some reason, just was really against me. And I came down from the stand, and you said this about that, blah, blah, blah. And he just started really being mean to me. I mean, when I would walk away from there and so forth. And it kind of made it unpleasant for me. But so one day I just walked over to him. I saw him standing there, and I said, look, I said, you know, I just put everything I can into this game. I said, I can tell you're a very dedicated fan. And I said, we have that in common. And I said, you know, I don't, whatever I've done to ruffle your feathers, I'm sorry that that's happened. But look, I said, I think we've got way more in common than we don't, and so forth. And the guy, I think, he evidently really appreciated me that I reached out to him like that, to take that much effort to do that. He ended up becoming like a friend of mine. And I would go to the track, and he'd come over, who do you like today, this and that. So I thought, wow, you know, if you can kind of win a guy over like that, that was so, just for whatever reason, I never did find out why he was so upset. But obviously I had said something along the lines that had really rubbed the guy the wrong way, which you almost can't help doing if you're broadcasting or writing. You're going to offend somebody someplace along the line. It's just going to happen, whether you intend to or not. And so I was very pleased about that. I will tell you, that just popped into my mind, Steve, one other story that I think your listeners will appreciate. I think you will, too, because this was one of the most memorable moments I had at that Santa Anita walking ring. But I got off of that walking ring one day, and this elderly couple came over to me, and they said, excuse me, sir, do you work here? And I said, yes, I do. What can I do for you? And they said, well, we're kind of confused. Now, keep in mind, this was the third race on the card. They've already run two races. And I said, you know, what are you finding confusing? And they said, well, we live here in Arcadia, and we'd never been to the races before. And so we came over today, and we were excited about it and everything. So we're standing here, but we don't understand why these horses come out of that building over there, meaning the paddock, and they come over here to the track, this little track, and they don't race, and then they go away. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, I thought maybe they were pulling my leg or something. They said, you know, why aren't they racing around this track, meaning the walking ring? And I said, no, there's a big track on the other side of this big building here. I'll take you over there. So I took them over there, and the look on the guy's face to look at the track, that they thought
that
the little walking ring was the actual racetrack.
That's
and when they
funny.
Saw the actual racetrack, I mean, the guy's eyes were popping out of his head, and he goes, oh, my goodness. He says, look at the size of that track.
That's great. That's great. I love it. That's pretty funny. I'll throw one at you that you will not. I'm going to bet you don't remember from that Calder experience on Summit of Speed. There were two-year-olds that debuted on that card, made their first starts, and neither of them won. And actually, they just so happens same trainer, but two-year-olds debuted that day on the undercard. That went on to be significant stake horses, real significant. And I'm curious if you remember this. And you probably, you know, they weren't in the stakes, obviously. They were in maiden specials. But
yeah, what you're saying rings a bell. And I want to say, gosh, you know, but the names, you know, that's one thing I used to. You know, like when I was a kid and the overnight came out for Playfair, I could tell you every horse, their breeding, what races they'd run in and everything. And unfortunately, when you get up there in years, these names are getting harder and harder. And what you're saying, I certainly remember that happening because I was, you know, I certainly followed those horses because of the fact that I had seen, was there that day. So, but I don't remember the specifics.
David Fox.
just happened on Summit of Speed Day 2008 happened to debut both Duke of Mischief and Big Drama.
Wow, that's right. Well, you know, the other thing about that was I had crossed paths with David Vox the one year I worked as the media relations manager with Darren Rogers at Lone Star Park in 2000 because he sent the horse in for one of the big stakes races there from Florida, and I got to meet him. And that's one of the things that, you know, you can tell pretty quickly certain trainers that you think, wow, this guy's sharp. And the horse, I don't see there again, I don't remember the name of his horse he won with, but it was a really nice horse. And the horse just, he won pretty impressively at Lone Star. I mean, he had the field pretty much over a barrel. And but that Fox, you know, I marked him down right then and there. Hey, this is a guy to keep an eye on. This is a pretty sharp guy. You know, it's another example that, and when we talk about trainers and how you observe trainers, Kathy Walsh, who I'd gotten to know in the Pacific Northwest, before I was working for the Racing Four, my first year in 1974, but I mean, she had been a leading trainer at Long Acres before that, really a trailblazer as a woman, and, so she was kind of already a legend by the time I first met her in 1975, my first summer at Long Acres. And so I knew her all these years, and she shipped in a couple of horses to Lone Star in 2000 for big stakes races. And I was at her barn when the horses arrived. And, Steve, these people wonder why certain trainers are successful, and that Steve Asmussen barn at Lone Star in 2000, watching Scott Blasi, he was there. And the attention to detail at those barns. And see, I'd already been down the road with Lucas in the early 1980s when he was building his juggernaut based in Southern California. And the attention to detail at that Lucas barn, I mean, every little detail. That was one of the reasons all these assistants, the Pletchers, and you can go the McLaughlins, and you can go on and on, Makers and so forth. I mean, these guys learned that if you're going to be a successful trainer, those are the details. You can't let any detail go, you know, unnoticed. And what Kathy Walsh, what she did just to get those horses bedded down, I'll never forget. I mean, this one shouldn't be next to colt. It's a filly, and this, and we got to get the bucket here, and the that, and the this. And I mean, you know, people just look at these trainers leading these horses over and think it's nothing. Well, believe me, it's far from nothing. And these days, a trainer not only has to be involved with the training of the horses, but of course, recruiting owners and be good at that, and so forth. So, but that Fox, you know, David Fox, that's one reason I knew to keep an eye out for horses, that, you know, of his, because his success hasn't surprised me one bit. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, he does a terrific job, and that was just an oddity. And I remember that from those summers. Tina and I very frequently, when I would get that break. And this is while my mother was still alive, and we'd go down and spend, you know, 10 days in the two weeks I typically will take off at the end of June, beginning of July, and, you know, Christmas to New Year's. And, you know, very frequently, there was about a 5-year period where I went to the Summit of Speed almost every year. And in fact, I was talking to Deja last week, after the show wrapped up, and we were talking about Calder, and her family. She's got relatives that are in the game and got horses Calder based, and that was as fun a day. And then, you know, earlier in the winter you'd go to the sale. You know, the sale was a great scene there. You know, the Breeze Show was such a great surface for the horses. I'm glad you brought up the 2-year-old sale, the Breeze Show this morning, and then they'll go through on Wednesday. We'll keep tabs on that this week as well. So, yeah, some nice memories. All of this to say that Baffert clearly has got a player with Comical Ghost. This happens to be, what's interesting is that he's a half to that Lady Montdor, that the stake winner. She's got to be, is she a four-year-old now, I think, that Tom Albertrani has had. And I haven't seen much. I haven't really seen her name. I don't know if she's been retired, or it's not unusual for Godolphin to get a stakes win. And she won. She's a turf horse, though, Lady Montdor. Medagliadoro. And that's a sib. And Hysterical Lady has been productive as a broodmare, actually. The Lady Montdor, she's got a couple of other winners. And now this horse debuting and looking like there's something there. John, we should touch on a couple of the other spots from the weekend at Santa Anita. I was thinking of reaching out to Patty Gallagher. A lot of people have seen Chuck Winner's name, of course, in the news of late, and Chuck having to be immersed in the negotiations with the governor's office and Senator Feinstein's office and Congresswoman Chu's office. And Chuck got a trip to the winner's circle with the Willifords, with LaForce, you know, who's really been nice, the power mare, the German bred. And Patty Gallagher's done a great job with her, and she upset Paradise Woods, speaking of John Sheriff's, upset Paradise Woods on Saturday in that Santa Maria.
You know, Patty's done a terrific job. I first got to know him when he was the assistant to Bill Shoemaker, when Bill Shoemaker was training, and Bill did very well as a trainer, which isn't something you can say about a lot of jockeys turned trainers. And Patty was Bill's right-hand person, and Patty's really done well on his own. He's a great guy, and like you say, he's done a terrific job. You know, this mare's been a check-earning machine pretty much at the highest level. I mean, lots of seconds, thirds, fourths, and grade one company. I actually thought she was a candidate to maybe sneak in and hit the board of the Breeders' Cup Distaff at a big price last fall. She didn't, but, you know, I thought she had that capability. And Paradise Woods, boy, you talk about a mare that just goes up and down. I mean, the minute I think that she's back on track, we get the hiccup here. And, you know, she broke awkwardly and it just couldn't get it done. And but credit to LaForce. And, you were talking about Comical Ghost. I did want to also mention that the same day debuting another three-year-old colt with another Hall of Fame trainer, Jerry Hollendorfer, King Jack. He looked pretty good, too. Mike Smith was aboard. And, in fact, King Jack got the same buyer speed figure that Comical Ghost did. So they both debuted at the same distance. They both won in 110 and change. They both got an 88 buyer. And they're both grandsons of Distorted Humor, because Hysterical Lady is by Distorted Humor, and King Jack is by Jimmy Creed, who is a son of Distorted Humor. And, you know, Jimmy Creed, it makes me think of B. Wayne Hughes. And that guy, what he's done in this game, and now with Spendthrift Farm, is really phenomenal. I mean, it's that guy I just have such respect for. And one of my favorite stories was when Mel Studi, who I personally feel should have been in the Hall of Fame, but the way the Hall of Fame worked for so many years, he had to compete on the same ballot when they would let only one trainer in per year.
Right.
One year he was against Buddy Delp. One year he was against Richard Mandela. I mean, you know, and you shouldn't have to compete against somebody to get into the Hall of Fame. It should be whether you deserve to be in or not. And they've made strides to improve the voting process for the Hall of Fame, but that doesn't help Mel Studi. And I think Mel Studi, under the current guidelines, quite possibly could have gotten in earlier, but unfortunately he'll probably go to his death without getting into the Hall of Fame. But Mel told me one morning his brother, Warren Studi, also a very successful trainer, and Warren was very good friends and trained horses for B. Wayne Hughes. And when B. Wayne Hughes was just getting started in his business, Public Storage, he urged Warren Studi to buy some stock in the company. And Warren Studi said, what is this company? What are you doing? And B. Wayne Hughes says, well, I'm starting this company where you have these places where people pay to store their stuff. Warren Studi says, are you crazy? That's what garages and attics and so forth are. That'll never work. Are you nuts? And B. Wayne Hughes says, well, maybe, I don't know. But he says, I'm going to give it a try. And, you know, here's a chance for you to get in on the ground floor, buy some of this stuff. Warren Studi says, oh, forget it. That stock, if he would have bought it, would have been worth, I mean, I think possibly millions by the time all was said and done. So I just always kind of chuckle at the guy poo-pooing that opportunity that he had to get on the ground floor of such a successful company as Public Storage.
That's pretty funny. A couple of things. I'm glad you brought up King Jack, who, as you said, got an 88 buyer as well. Ran, what, an hour after Comical Ghost. I've said before, delighted for Michael Stinson to do well, and this is a Jimmy Creed, as it happens. There's a little Spendthrift tie-in, and I'm going to guess that this is one of the horses that, let me see, I'm just looking at, I want to look at the price. Well, 100,000. Let me think. Keeneland, 17. Maybe not. Maybe. Let me see. 18. I'm going to say no. Okay. I thought maybe. I'll back off that. But anyway, King Jack, Jimmy Creed on the dirt. So we'll see if there's a, you know, what the future holds there. If he'll stay with dirt or they'll move him to grass. And I want to thank a couple of people. My friend Art came out right away and noted Lady Montour is running on Friday. She's in the New York Stake, so she is active. And in fact, she didn't run great in the Sheepshead Bay, but that was the start of her five-year-old campaign. She got soft turf that day, and Kendra Carmouche aboard Lady Montour for Tom A. and Godolphin on Friday. How about that? Lady Prance-a-Lot, John, too. Let's get that in. Baltus, and yeah, this has been a bit of a favorite for us starting last year with her two-year-old campaign. She's a well-campaigned three-year-old now, and that's a breakthrough win. She's tried the Graded Stake Company and has been close repeatedly, and she gets the breakthrough win in the Honeymoon. This came Saturday as well, the mile and an eighth on the grass. So congratulations. That's a group that Michael Ivarone and Jules are in, and the Durandos and the Arnts, and there's about three or four couples that have had some fun with Lady Prance-a-Lot, and now she's a Graded Stake winner.
You know, not too long ago, I was following, walking behind Richard Baltus at Santa Anita as he was headed to the racing office, and I was just following him along. I didn't want to, like, bother him or anything, and he stopped and turned around. He knew somebody was kind of walking behind him, and he says, oh, he says, how's it going? And I said, good, Richard. I said, how's it going with you? And he just shook his head, and he said, you know, that Baffert gets all the good horses, and he just starts moaning about Baffert, which I ended up telling Baffert when I came out to do your show one morning, Steve, when you were out for the Santa Anita Derby. I was telling Baffert, I said, you kind of got a big fan in Baltus, because I said, the guy just spent 5 minutes bending my ear about how, boy, you get all the good horses and blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm going to tell you something, Steve. This Baltus is building up a pretty good operation of his own.
Yeah, he is.
You know, he's, and we're not talking about just a bunch of 16,000 claimers and so forth. This guy, I'm really impressed with what he's been able to accomplish. And this is a filly that he, you know, he's very good at spotting his horses, and obviously they're well prepared when they come over to race, and the record speaks for itself. And he's just getting more and more clients. And What pops into my mind, Steve, it wouldn't shock me if maybe in 5-10 years from now or something, you'd be walking behind some other trainer that would be younger, and he'd turn around and say, you know what, that Baltus, that guy gets all the good horses. That So that's kind of how it works in this game sometimes. I did want to mention, too, because I keep an eye on what's going on in, back in my part of the country that's my home, the Northwest, and any port in a storm yesterday won the Governor's Stakes at Emerald Downs and was very impressive for Blaine Wright. Blaine Wright, of course, made more of a national name this year for, with another Twist of Fate, who ran in the Preakness Stakes, and that was for this owner, Peter Redekop, who puts a lot of money into this game. But this is a City Zip five-year-old, a grandson of Wild Again, who blazed six furlongs yesterday at 107 and change and just won with authority. They're planning to bring him back, run him in the next sprint stake at Emerald. They'll skip the Mount Rainier, which is the two-turn prep for the prestigious Long Acres Mile, and they plan to then go right from that next sprint into the Long Acres Mile. And the way this City Zip won yesterday, even though he's only run a mile once in the Alcatraz at Golden Gate back in 2017 and finished third, the way he won yesterday, he's going to be a tough cookie in the Long Acres Mile this year, I think. So congratulations to those connections. You know, Blaine Wright, here's another guy, Steve, and he, what a barn he's built up, and he's done it in Northern California, much like Jerry Hollendorfer did. And, of course, Blaine Wright, his father, I know very well, Richard Wright, who was a successful jockey and trainer for years in the Pacific Northwest. And I was so tickled that Richard Wright was able to be with his son at the Preakness. What an achievement it is for that family to have be running a horse in the Preakness Stakes. So, and by the way, this is a grandson of, I mentioned, Wild Again. Well, Wild Again, of course, won the first Breeders' Cup Classic, very controversial race at Hollywood Park in 1984. And it was a great honor for me that I was literally working alongside in that Hollywood Park press box for that inaugural Breeders' Cup to none other than Joe Hirsch, as we kind of circle around and come
Holy
back
cow.
To Joe Hirsch.
There you go, John. Well done. That's the full... That's the full circle. Brilliant. Nicely executed. And by the way, for those that are wondering, that's not the Richard Wright that wrote Native Son. If you're for those of you that are of a literary bend, no, this is a different Richard Wright. John, a couple of sidebars out of that. Baltus, that's his sixth graded stake win of the year with six different
Wow.
horses.
I didn't realize. Think of that. Wow, that's a good one, Steve. Wow.
Yeah, and you know, the imports, Pants on Fire, Alicia's World, Lady Prance a Lot, you know, all imports to this country. And then he also, of course, last week, Marquis Water and Secret Spice and the Neck Shares. So Baltus, very, very good. And I tell you, for those of you that didn't see my picture of Baltus and Jim Cassidy at Churchill Downs Derby week, they may have been house hunting, but the suit that Baltus had on Derby Day was unbelievable. And I do have to find out where he got that. And because I'll tell you, I was impressed. I want to get that out there. Also yesterday, in addition to you know, to the other stake, he also won the Cinema yesterday, mid-card, the Cinema, the Mile, and the Eighth. That was with Neptune Storm for Cybertech International and a host of partners. This is a Stormy Atlantic gelding, a horse that just seeing where he got from Bill Morey, interestingly, had won the Singletary last time out and now adds the Cinema. So it looks like an emerging
three-year-old. Three straight victories on the grass. This is kind of an up-and-comer right here. And it looks like they very well they're seriously considering the Belmont Derby for this Stormy Atlantic gelding.
Nice.
So that's how much they think of him. Because they again, Baltus, he knows how tough that Belmont Derby is going to shape up. And that tells you something right there. It's one of the reasons I made Neptune Storm the favorite on the morning line, and he didn't quite go off as the favorite in the race. But But he certainly won it nicely under Graydon Van Dyke, and you might be seeing him show up in that Rich Belmont Derby on the grass coming up later.
Nice. Well, John, I appreciate actually you hanging through this last half hour, and we got some of the recapping in. I got quite a bit more we'll have to do tomorrow, but in a couple of notes. Elsewhere, Churchill, for instance, I haven't mentioned the Aristides result. You know, they raced late Saturday night. Wilbo with Corey Lannery, and there was a lot of emotion attached to that. It was his late wife's birthday, and that did not go unnoticed. And how about Extravagant Kid for Brendan Walsh, won that Mighty Bow. That was a nice late sequence there. We started part of the morning in the first hour, talked to Mike Campbell about the exciting news from Illinois, and Jack Sisterson added another graded stake. 2 weeks ago, it was the Chick Lang and the upset. Less of an upset here. Coach Whip and got bet down to favoritism, for God's sake. We thought maybe there was a chance we'd get a little bit of a something, because Coach Whip, I was looking forward to betting her in Baltimore, and they waited, and it looked like a good move by Jack Sisterson. Coach Whip won that Arlington Matron. So just a few of the spots. You talked, John, about any port in a storm. How about another regional sprinting stalwart? Pink Lloyd won again.
Wow,
unbelievable for Robert Tiller, just unstoppable. Pink Lloyd won the Greenwood, and Gail Cox, congratulations to Gail Cox. There's another Stormy Atlantic, so a big weekend for Stormy Atlantic. The veteran stallion at Hillendale, El Tormenta, won the Connaught Cup under Louis Contreras. So a few more of the highlights. There's some other stuff we have to slip into the rest of the action from Penn. I told you Mark Cassie is on his way to New York, so we'll get Cassie live in person here. I also didn't mention from Saturday, you know, we had previewed the Epsom Derby, and Anthony Van Dyke with a mild, I guess he was, you know, he was one of the ones for O'Brien. So Anthony Van Dyke, and I've already mentioned that Almondi upset yesterday.
Galileo.
In the...
Galileo was son of Sadler's Wells. I've been to one arc. It was 1984. Sadler's Wells was in that arc. And Sadler's Wells is a tremendous source of stamina and pedigrees, and War of Will is out of a Sadler's Wells mare. So that's something to keep in mind for the Belmont. There seems to be a fair amount of people that question the mile and a half for War of Will, and look, you don't know it until they do it, and maybe it is too far for him. But I will tell you one thing that could help him is the fact that he's out of a Sadler's Wells mare. It's like Secretariat. A lot of people didn't think a Son of Bold Ruler could win the Kentucky Derby at a mile and a quarter, let alone the Belmont, because they were saying no Bold Ruler could win a mile and a quarter race like the Kentucky Derby. Well, of course, Secretariat broke the track record of the Kentucky Derby, broke the record of the Preakness, and then the race of our lifetime in the Belmont by 31 lengths and 224 flat. But the key with Secretariat was to complement that Bold Ruler on top out of a Prince Quillo mare on the bottom, and that's where you're getting that source of stamina. I used to love, Steve, those horses out of a Stage Door Johnny mare. There's another Belmont winner from 1968. And so a lot of times that bottom side is what can give you that ability to successfully negotiate that mile and a half, a demanding mile and a half of the test of the champion.
John White, I appreciate it, and congratulations again. We'll be on hand tomorrow when Johnny D collects your Joe Hirsch Award and get some final thoughts about the Belmont in the Express Bet Wagering Guide. And we'll talk to John next week, and we'll talk to you tomorrow here. I do want to note 3:52 today, post time, the 7th at Finger Lakes. You got the George Barker, and it drew a nice field. Nice group, including Al Gold with Avinu Malkano, and actually had Avinu's sibling. Good Shabbos, run second. in the debut at Monmouth the other day. But this is a good group. Saratoga Giro for Paul Barrow. Linda Rice has got Bavaro. Winston's Chance, the 8-time winner for Debbie Breed. It was a good, fun addition. Finger Lakes today, 3:52. Plus you got parks and more. So plenty to keep you busy. Back with you live from Belmont Park tomorrow. If you missed anything, archive, podcast in a little bit. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. I want to thank Deja. Had fun with Dave Grenig, Winston Hislop, Mike Campbell, Johnny D, and John White. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I want you to know it's time to go. Yeah, we are done. I want you to see.
Done.